yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a-screaming now. Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today the topic, of course, is the impact of the coronavirus on the U.S. economy that seems to grow significantly day by day. Let's talk about that and what kind of measures are going to be necessary economically. I won't address the biologic. That's for other experts. But what's going to be necessary economically to prevent the U.S. economy from totally imploding during this unprecedented event? All right, let's talk about, to begin with, some of the dimensions of what's going on right now. And as I said, it's sort of accelerating every day. Let's talk about the jobs, the unemployment. Okay, unemployment increasing this month alone by over 2 million jobs lost. Goldman Sachs investment bank predicts 2.25 million jobs will be lost. In 1 week alone, the first week in March, 281,000 jobs. Well, that's just those filing for unemployment benefits. It's not counting those who aren't eligible or who don't file. So, okay, just unemployment benefits. 281,000, 2.25 million jobs this month. Now, how does this compare to other crises we've had? Well, let's go back to 2008-09. We are running, at the peak, 665,000 jobs lost per month, 665,000. In 2009, there were 6.6 million total unemployment benefit claims. Now, understand that filing for unemployment benefits is a subset of total unemployed. Some people don't file for various reasons. Okay, so we are running at a rate greater than 2008-09. This is worse than 2008-09. By the way, let me digress here. I wrote an article back in September 2018. And in that article, which was entitled Comparing 1929 to 2008 to the next recession. This was 18 months ago. And in that article, by the way, you can read that article on my blog, jackrasmus.com. I reposted it under the title, A Tale of Three Crises. In that article, I predicted we would be in a crash within 2 to 3 years. Well, I was wrong. It's only been 18 months. And here we are. And it's important to understand that this isn't simply caused by this virus. No, no. The U.S. economy was extremely fragile, even as early as 2018. Extremely fragile. And what that means, fragile, it means it's very easily driven into a serious contraction. In other words, the economy is not healthy. It's not strong. Makes it, it's like your immune system is not strong, and that means you can catch the disease. Well, the U.S. economy immune system was extremely weak. So when the virus hits, we have a very deep and rapid contraction going on. This is September 2018. Why was it fragile, weak? Well, we had these bubbles going on in all the financial markets. just about across the board, stock markets and so forth, fueled by Trump's massive tax cut for investors and businesses and the rich, and fueled as well under Obama by free money that was being distributed through the central bank to the other banks and virtually free loans given to businesses. And interest rates were so low, businesses were loading up on corporate debt. Corporate debt, Fortune 500, doubled from $5 trillion to $10 trillion over the last decade. That's just Fortune 500. Corporate debt doubled. Why? Because interest rates were so cheap. Businesses like Apple and others were floating corporate bonds and taking the money from those corporate bonds and giving it to their stockholders and dividend payouts to their shareholders. And you know what? The majority of that went to those who held most of the stock, which was the senior managers at Apple and tech companies and pharma companies and so forth. They were enriching themselves hand over fist because of the cheap money. And then on top of that, you know, Obama extends the Bush tax cuts for 10 years. He did this in 2013. That cost us another $5 trillion hit to the national debt. And now we get Trump, who passes $4.5 trillion on top of all that. And that was all on top of George W. Bush, $4 trillion. $15 trillion in tax breaks for rich and corporations and multinational corporations and investors in the last two decades. At the same time, we keep raising the defense war spending by hundreds of billions every year. You know, the total war spending Defense Department now is $1 trillion a year. Oh, they say $720 billion. Well, that's just the Pentagon, you see. And a lot of our military costs are squirreled away in other budgets, in the energy budget, in the Atomic Energy Commission, in veterans, and so forth. It's $1 trillion a year. And we're giving trillions of dollars in tax cuts. And corporations are giving trillions of dollars every year in stock buybacks and dividend payouts. Well, that drove all the bubbles, didn't it? But it was all artificial. Under Trump's buybacks and dividend payouts, $1.2 trillion a year. Oh, well, Trump says, oh, I want to stop the stock buybacks. Yeah, well, it's too damn late. Companies are rushing for cash, and everywhere they can now as the crisis emerged, now they're not going to give stock buybacks. They're going to hoard that cash. Too late, Donald. Yeah, and too late, Obama. You're part of the problem, too. Okay, so, you know, we had this fragile economy on the financial side, all these bubbles now bursting, and the prices go down. The financial asset prices fall faster than they went up. Took them 10 years to go up. Well, 10 weeks to go down, if that. And the real economy was very weak, too, because all the money flowing offshore by multinational corporations to expand offshore or into financial markets to create those bubbles. Investment in real investment that makes things, that hires people, was contracting all throughout 2019. And boy, it's falling through the floor now. Commercial property, buildings, everything. Very slow. And then we had the Trump trade war, so that whacked all the production from trade. By the way, you know, a digression on this. Why are we so short of ventilators and N95 masks and other medical equipment? I'll tell you why. Because we allowed these companies who make this stuff to go to Asia, to go to China, and produce it over there. And then Trump's trade war cut a lot of that out. So now we're short. We're short of ventilators and N95 and hazmat suits and all the rest. We're short of it. It's been going on, moving the supply chains, as they say, offshore. Yeah. And now we're paying the price. By the way, did you know that China has a surplus of N95 masks and ventilators? Yeah, they're giving them to Italy. They got a surplus. Are we going to ask China to give it to us? No way. Trump is too proud. That would be too obvious, wouldn't it? So now we're you know, hurrying around, scurrying around, trying to produce these things. Hey, look, here's an example. How many ventilators do we have in California? Oh, about 8,000. By all sources, patching up a little here and there, 8,000. How many hospitalizations do we foresee here with this crisis? 90,000. 90,000. We got only at 70,000 hospital beds. And we, our model showed 90,000 people in California are going to get this bad enough to go to the hospital. Actually, 26 million, out of our 40 million population are going to get this virus. And 90,000 are going to have to be hospitalized. And we only have 70,000 beds. That's why California is scurrying around converting college dorms and hotels into beds or hospital rooms. Yeah. Well, what about the equipment, right? You're going to have the equipment? Are you going to have nurses for all those college dorms and hotels that are going to be way stations to the funeral home? Yeah, we're just going to park people there and let them die because we don't have enough people and we don't have enough medical equipment. Just because you get a room doesn't mean, you know, unless you're just going to park somebody there and let them go. And that's just California. You know, what? New York City is going to be even worse. Big cities are going to be even worse. Yeah, that's the crisis, but it's a crisis because we destroyed our public housing system in the 80s under Bill Clinton. Yeah, with his HMO bill, allowed them to cut hospital beds and allowed for-profit private hospital chains to grab up the public hospitals and shut them down so they could have a shortage and raise their prices. Yeah. It's coming home to roost, you know. The policies from Bill Clinton through George Bush, Obama, and now Trump are coming home to roost. We don't have the equipment for the crisis, the medical equipment, and it's beginning to show. Okay. Well, that was a digression, folks. Let me get back to the scope, the scope of this impact on the economy. I mentioned unemployment. 2.25 million jobs this month alone, faster than in 2008, and at even faster than the collapse of jobs in 1929-30. Even faster and deeper. What's going to be the GDP for the U.S. economy? Well, it's definitely going to contract. I mean, the contraction in March is so severe. First quarter GDP has to be negative. What about second quarter? Well, here's some statistics. J.P. Morgan Chase is forecasting a 14% collapse in GDP. 14%. In the worst month of 2008, it was 8.4% GDP collapse. What was it in 1932, in the worst year of the Great Depression? It was 13% contraction. In other words, second quarter GDP is going to be worse than the worst quarter of the Great Depression. We are at war, no doubt about it. Even Trump, you know, from 3 weeks ago saying, oh, it's going to be gone by April, and oh, don't worry, don't worry. Well, now he's damn well worried, and he should be, and he says, well, I'm going to be a war president. Well, what are they proposing in Congress? Is it a war mobilization budget? By the way, go to my blog, jackrasmus.com, and I have an article there right behind the one I just told you about comparing 29 and 08 and today, which is relatively long. The posting before that is the U.S. needs a war mobilization budget. This is a war. Of course it's a war. And you know what? The enemy has invaded us. It's amongst us everywhere. U.S. fought its wars offshore. Not this time. This war is right in the midst, right? The invaders have parachuted in, you know, in thousands of locations across the country. They're here. And you know what? Who let them in? Trump. You know, it's not by accident that the epicenters and the sources of the spread of this virus has been on the coasts initially. Now it's everywhere, but on the coast, in the ports and in the airports on the coast, Washington, San Francisco, L.A., Boston, New York. Yeah, Trump said, oh, you know, I prevented the Chinese from coming over in, you know, only direct flights. You know, nothing stopped them from coming in through Mexico or coming in through Canada or any other country. No, nothing stopped them. It's a problem. Trump let him in. Yeah. Well, you know, remember the airport? They brought him into airports, you know? People leaving Wuhan and places like that, they brought him in and then set him up at U.S. Air Force bases. The first cases in California were in the towns around the Air Force base up in Fairfield. Those were the first cases. Then the next cases were people who were left off of ships, just allowed to come off of ships, and then the ships went on. And these were the ships, by the way, the Grand Princess, that ended up with hundreds of cases, right? We dumped these people. We allowed them right in our midst, and they were carrying the bug. Yeah, well, Trump. And then, of course, Trump fired everybody in the pandemic office of the CDC. So there was no one to respond to plan this thing. It's a disaster. If he's a war president, you know, he ought to abdicate. You ought to get rid of him. He ought to resign, you know? Come on. All right. What would it take if this was a true war mobilization effort? Let's look at World War II, right? U.S. government spending percentage of total GDP in 1940 was 15 or 16% of GDP. Within one year, the U.S. mobilized, and in 1942, government spending as a percent of GDP had risen to 40%, from 15 to 40%. That was a true war mobilization effort. And you know what the first executive order of President Franklin Roosevelt was at that time? A crash program to mass produce penicillin. Penicillin had been invented, but we weren't able to mass produce it. Well, the first order of the government was mass produce penicillin, and they did it within 6 months. And government spending, 40%. Of GDP. You know what we spend now? 21%. It's been about 20% ever since 1947. Government spending as a percent of GDP. And a rising percentage of that every year has been military spending, by the way. We need to increase our spending to 40% of GDP immediately. Immediately. That would be a true war mobilization budget to fight this invader that, by the way, is going to kill more of us than all the wars in the 20th century the U.S. participated in. Yeah, the U.S. lost about 500,000 people in World War II. The projection is we're going to lose millions to this enemy. So why aren't we mobilizing? Why aren't we mobilizing to 40% of GDP? You know, at one point in 1944, the government was 70% of GDP, 70. The U.S. won World War II because of its war mobilization effort. We simply outproduced the Japanese and the Nazis by a big margin, big margin. You know, they were producing like 5,000 fighter aircraft, and we were producing 50,000. That's how the U.S. won wars. It just outproduced everybody. Because wars, world wars, are wars of attrition. And the U.S. simply outproduced them. We have the capability of doing this, but we haven't mobilized to do this. We got to spend more than 21% of GDP, which was last year, 2019. What was the budget last year? What was this 21% total in dollar terms? It was $4.45 trillion. 4.45 is 21% of last year's total GDP. By the way, that 4.45 is up from 3.8 trillion when Obama left office. So in other words, every year, Trump has increased it by 700 billion. Annually, not total over his 3 years, every year. $500 to $700 billion more. Okay, so it's 4.45 trillion, which is 21% of GDP. What would it cost us to raise it to 40% of GDP? Well, a 40% increase of GDP based upon last year's GDP numbers would be $8.5 trillion. We would have to go from 4.45 trillion to 8.5 trillion. We would have to spend $4 trillion more to fight this war. And you know, that's what I've been proposing. Even before I did these calculations last week, I proposed, you know, we would need, in my addendum to my war mobilization article, I said we would need $4 trillion. Well, that's just about what we would need, right? We would have to boost the budget from 4.45 to $8.5 trillion. In other words, $4.1 trillion to get from 21% of GDP to 40%. And that's what we're going to need just in phase one. Phase one meaning over the next 6 months. If you're serious, Donald, about being a war president, then spend like one. Well, what are they proposing out there in Congress, right? What they're proposing is $1 trillion. $1 trillion. They're behind the curve. Look, the U.S. economy is $1.7 trillion a month. The proposal coming out of Congress to be signed on Monday, probably, is for $1 trillion. $1,000 grant per adult, because they're not going to be working, right? And $500 or $300 or $500 per child. And that will amount to about $500 billion. And then another $500 billion to bail out businesses. I think it's $150 billion in small business loans, and the rest in various ways, $350 billion, bailing out big companies, big corporations, you know, including $50 billion to the airline industry. Let me digress. Yeah, we're going to give the airline industry, going to give them $50 billion after the SOBs gave themselves $45 billion in stock buybacks. In other words, if they hadn't been so damn greedy to give themselves all this money in recent years, they'd have that cash on hand, and we wouldn't have to fill that black hole that exists in the airline industry because they gave themselves so much money, their shareholders and their senior executives, so much money, $45 billion. Yeah, but now they want us to fill the hole. I don't think we should do it. I think that we should have the government take over that damn industry or the weakest companies and consolidate the weakest airlines and then see what it takes to support the weakest, the strongest airlines. You know, and we did that. Didn't we do that in 2008 with the auto companies? Yeah, the U.S. took a position, as they say. In other words, bought preferred stock in those companies. And with the money, the companies were able to keep going. And because the U.S. was a part owner now of the auto companies, we could send people in to sit on the elbows of those execs to make sure that they didn't give themselves big bonuses and raises. In other words, that it went to keeping the company going. Well, we should do the same thing again. We did that back in 1991 when the mortgage industry collapsed. You know, savings and loans industries collapsed. We went in, the government went in, a new Reconstruction Finance Corporation, as it was called, consolidated, took over these small SNLs, took over them and merged them with SNLs that weren't in trouble, created new companies, right? And bailed some out, bailed out the strongest ones. Let the weak ones consolidate or go under. That's what we should be doing. We shouldn't be giving them a damn handout. You know, $50 billion after they gave themselves $45 billion. And, you know, that's a problem replicated across industries right now because, as I said before, they've been giving themselves $1 trillion-plus annual stock buyback dividend payouts. Now they want us, after they gorge themselves and giving themselves all this money, they want us to bail them out. Not without strings, you know. We got to start looking at the process of nationalization of these industries. And the first step is to buy the stock, buy the preferred voting stock. Well, that's a digression, right? On the $350 billion handout Trump wants to give the big companies. Small business needs it more. And small business doesn't need loans. We should be giving them grants, just as we're going to have to give grants of $1,000 a month per adult, and that's going to have to go on for more than 1 month, just as we're supposed to give, you know, we're going to have to do that, the small businesses should be given grants, not loans, because when this thing is over, you know, if they're loaded up with debt again, they're not going to be able to really start up and hire again. And most of the jobs come from small business. What's small business? Well, you could define it as fewer than 50 employees or maybe fewer than 100 employees. That's what small business is. And, you know, there's 5-6 million of them out there. 80% of all the businesses are small businesses in this country. Only 20% are big corporations. So, you know, I'm in favor of small business grants. Just as I'm in favor of, we got to make these unemployed people whole, you know, and not just give them cash grants, which is necessary, but realize that this is going to be an ongoing thing. We just can't give people $1,000 each without jobs and hope that's going to tide them over and that's going to be enough. It's going to take more than that. Well, what was my phase one proposal that I mentioned earlier that I've written here earlier this week? You know, an economic recovery program, theirs versus mine. Theirs meaning Congress, Republicans, Trump, Democrats even, right? Theirs versus mine. That's on my blog too. You know, that's two postings down. You know, that's my article earlier, well, last weekend, I think it was, followed up by war economic mobilization proposal. And then, of course, most recently, the comparison of 29 and 08 and 2020. And I'll be writing here over the weekend phase two of what's necessary, phase two, and then maybe even a phase three, right? But the first phase, what was the first phase? Well, if you go to economic recovery program, mine versus theirs, or theirs versus mine, what I said phase one necessary is the following. One, paid medical leave, a 14-day paid medical leave until vaccines are generally available. And who would get the paid medical leave? Those tested with virus, those with symptoms, and all those parents of kindergarten through eight students who were forced to remain home due to school closures. paid medical leave. 14 days, renewable by the state legislatures, not by Congress. Okay. Because in some states, you're going to have to, where it's worse, like California, New York, it's going to be more than 14 days paid medical leave, right? Secondly, company reimbursement for paid medical leave. In other words, the company's got to continue paying these people on medical leave, and they can get reimbursed from the government if they're a small business. If they're a large business, you know, these folks are have been fattening themselves up for quite some time, and they can get loans from the Federal Reserve if they need to. But small business, you know, they can petition the government. And this, by the way, should be all administered through Medicare for payments for reimbursement for medical leave, right? Paid medical leave shall not result in a reduction of paid sick leave already accrued by workers through their company or union contracts. In other words, don't use that up. You know, this is an emergency. This is in addition to paid sick leave. Section 3 of my Phase 1 proposal was employment guarantees. Employers are required to restore workers on paid medical leave who return to work to their former position, former pay, and former benefits. In other words, no cutbacks here when this thing is declared over, where you cut people's wages or you cut their benefits or whatever. And all other benefits, like accrual of pension benefits and so forth, shall continue to accrue while people are on paid medical leave. Well, how about hospital testing and related costs? Costs for hospital or clinic or doctor office testing and office visits should be billed by these health providers directly to the government. I think they're actually adopting that in this first provision Congress has offered here. In other words, don't have the worker pay and they get reimbursed. They don't have it, you know? Over half of the people in this country have $400 for emergencies. Over half. What a shameful thing that people are so indebted and their wages have been stagnant for so long that all and their credit cards are maxed out because there's not enough sufficient wage income. But that's the reality, right? And by the way, not just for testing, but all other healthcare costs, related, unrelated for testing, you know, should be similarly billed by the company and health provider, health insurance provider, to the government. You know, I mean, co-pays or deductibles and all that. No, there should be no out-of-pocket monthly or recurring expenses for people on paid medical leave at all. And by the way, the provision is should be in phase two. Everybody who is laid off for any other reason from March 1st on, right, should receive 3/4 of their pay in uninsurance benefits. 3/4 at least. 3/4. In other words, you give people the initial bump or boost, whatever you want to call it, here, $1,000 to tide them over the initial effects, and then have them go and file for unemployment benefits, and then they should continue 3/4 of their pay on unemployment benefits, and not for 6 months, for as long as it takes here to get over this thing. Or else, you know, you're going to have to give them $1,000 every month or more. You know, $1,000 a month, if you're single, isn't going to cover your bills, is it? No, not very well. You know, and if you're married and you got a mortgage and everything, even $2,000 isn't going to cover it, not going to cut it. You know, this is just an emergency, an initial injection here, this bill coming on Monday from Congress. And if they want to avoid subsequent repeated injections every month, well, then they're going to have to up the unemployment benefit system to at least 3/4 of pay. Okay. Pharmacy and drug costs should be waived for patients, you know, who are infected, even if they don't have symptoms, and for all of their dependents under age 21. Now, what are health insurance companies' responsibility? You know, we've got about half or so of people who are on employer-provided health insurance, right? Unfortunately, many of those have increasing deductibles, you know, $1,000, $2,000 deductibles. So they may be insured, but it's hardly a coverage because they can't afford the rising rates, you see. Okay, so half of them are in that situation. The rest of the people are either on Medicare or Medicaid, or the children of the poor on this program called SHIP, S-C-H-I-P, right? Well, the government can implement these terms and conditions for all of those as well on Medicare and Medicaid and so forth. That's the government's responsibility. But then we have, 30-some million people who are totally uninsured, who aren't on these government programs, totally uninsured. 87 million who are underinsured, as I mentioned. Well, then the health insurance companies are going to have a responsibility here. If anybody is laid off due to economic effects of the virus on their company, of their primary employment, the health insurance provider for that company shall waive workers' and dependents' share of their monthly health insurance premium. In other words, if you're laid off, right? I'm not talking about medical leave. I'm just talking about being laid off for economic reasons, right? Your health insurance should be continued by the health insurance company. And as I said previously, there should be no deductibles, no copays here, no out-of-pocket during this interim period if you're insured, right? If you're insured by covered by these government programs, well, then that applies as well. Well, what about the 37 million who are uninsured? Well, we should have a special provision in Medicare, a one-page sign-up, right, where you sign up and you are covered under Medicare. We need to emergency expand Medicare to those tens of millions who have neither employer insurance or aren't on any of those three government programs, and then treat them as if they were a Medicare member immediately. Medicare for all, in other words, for all those who have no insurance. You know, those who still have employer insurance would be covered under the terms of which I already described, right? Premiums, deductibles, copays, and coverage shall remain frozen until a state legislature declares the virus effect is over. In other words, no increases here. Right? And no increases afterwards for a period of time. In other words, you can't gouge people to make up for your losses, health insurance companies. You know, state legislatures will review insurance company requests to raise rates after the virus effect is over for the next 3 years. Next 3 years. Attempts to recoup costs during the virus period by accelerating their price increases or reducing coverage will be denied during this three-year period if the price increase is greater than the local consumer price index increase for the urban region. In other words, you can raise your prices after this is over, but no greater than the average inflation rate. And it's all going to be approved or disapproved by the state legislatures. Okay, I talked about Medicare and Medicaid, right? Same applies, same terms and conditions of full coverage, no cost applies to everybody who are on those programs. By the way, refusal by doctors or hospitals or clinics to accept Medicaid patients will result in fines levied on the health provider's annual federal tax payment. You know, there's some doctors who just don't want to take Medicaid patients. In fact, I think the majority of them don't want to, because the compensation is fixed and they're in an urban area where they can charge more, and therefore they just don't accept Medicaid. And the same thing was starting to occur with Medicare patients. Well, you can't refuse anybody, and that applies for 3 years as well. Okay, unemployment benefits. Article 7 of my program, Well, I've been talking about this, right? Everybody laid off for economic reasons. In other words, company says, economically work from home or work from home without pay. You know, if you're working from home, they're paying you. That's not a problem. But, you know, most people can't work from home. Maybe the techies can, right? But, you know, if you're a public, a firefighter or something, right, you can't work from home. Or you're a construction worker, you can't work from home. If you're a manufacturing worker making cars, you can't work from home, right? Or if you were a restaurant worker or hotel worker, how can you work from home? No, maybe the techies can. But most people are going to have to stay home, and either the company continues to pay them, which they're going to refuse to do, or the government has to provide them with a monthly grant, or much more efficiently, through the unemployment insurance system expansion. And the same for people on disability insurance, of course, right? And this kind of three-fourths of unemployment, and your basic take-home pay, unemployment insurance benefits, has to continue. You know, it just can't be a 90-day thing, because I'm telling you, to recover, for businesses to recover, is going to be slow. It's not going to be, oh, we got a vaccine, and everyone goes and gets their vaccine shot, and okay, everybody can go to work now. No, it's not going to be a V-shaped recovery. You know, that's a bullshit lie, V-shaped recovery. It's going to be a long L-shaped thing as far as jobs. Look, the last crisis of 2008-09, how long did it take us, and that's not as severe as this one, to get the jobs back that we had on the eve of the crisis? How long? Well, the peak of the jobs, of course, was in December 2007. It took us to 2015 or 15, I think, just to get the jobs back that we had lost. It was a six-year jobless recession. Yeah. And then, by the way, the jobs that came back were at lower pay with fewer benefits. Yeah, Obama got the jobs back, but the rate of pay was less. When they came back, the employer said, oh, okay, well, we can only bring you back part-time or on a temporary basis. You know, the part-time temp jobs ballooned, and the full-time jobs shrunk under Obama. And the wages, of course, were far less, and the benefit coverage far less. Well, we can't allow that to happen. But it's going to take something that can't occur overnight. You know, once people get vaccines, you know, it won't happen overnight. So a lot of these benefits and guarantees of employment, benefits and wages, are going to have to be legally required. And that's why, you know, you're going to have to support small businesses even after this and continue to support supplemental unemployment, maybe, benefits for other people, right? By the way, we also need stricter laws and enforcement about doing something about all the speculators and price gougers and scammers and scalpers who are out there now. You know, I mean, you read about people who have N95 masks that used to cost 59 cents and they're selling them for $10 each, you know? Let's give these people jail terms, right, as an example. You know, it's even worse than people buying up, as they were, you know, all this cleansers and disinfectants and so forth, and putting in their garage thousands of bottles of this stuff and then selling them. You know, that's disgusting. That's despicable behavior. Let's throw those SOBs in jail and publicize it, and maybe that'll control it a little bit, right? Okay, general company requirements, right? Loans on rates, interest rates. Well, I think the loans on interest rates should be no more than what businesses are able to borrow from the Federal Reserve. You know, what's the rate on a a business, a bank borrowing from the Federal Reserve? Well, it's about 1% on a 10-year loan here, right? You can get it from the Fed for about 1%, Mr. Banker. And then Mr. Banker turns around and he lends it out at maybe 2 or 3%. The prime rate. Yeah. Well, loans for businesses that already exist should be reduced. The interest rate should be reduced, you know, to no more than what the banks get from the government, right? Which is 1-1.5%. That's what they should be paying. Reduce these interest rates immediately on past loans, and new loans, grants for small businesses. By the way, that should be done for student loans as well. You know, the government gouging students at 5 to 6.5% loans under education loans. You know, that's criminal. That's criminal. The banks don't even charge that. And the government's charging our kids 6.5%, making profits off of them like that. Well, I got a provision on student loans I'll talk about shortly. All right, so banks and mortgage companies should immediately institute a moratorium on mortgage payments for those on paid medical leave and those laid off for economic reasons associated with the virus effect on their company for at least 3 months. Auto companies, financial services, credit unions, and so forth, should do the same, a moratorium on auto loans. You know, going into this crisis, 7 million people had defaulted already on their auto loans. 7 million turned in their keys. Well, you can imagine how many are going to turn in their keys now. So we got to do something about lowering interest rates on existing loans here. And by the way, you know, the moratorium on federal student loans that I've mentioned here, we got to make sure that this is a real moratorium. In other words, the government now has a provision on student loans. If you're unemployed and you can't pay your student loan, you can go into what's called forbearance. In other words, you could forgo payments on your student loans. But you know what they do? They keep accruing the interest, even though you're in forbearance and you're not paying. The interest on your loan keeps rising, added to your principal. So when you are returning to work and you got to resume your student loan payments, you got all this interest piled onto your principal. And this is even more disgusting. When you start paying back again, all of your payments go to the interest charge. In other words, you're not retiring your principal. You're paying down that interest charge that you accumulated when you were in forbearance. So, you know, you could be paying hundreds of dollars a month or more, and your principal's not going down. In fact, it might be going up because you're getting interest charged on your principal, too. You know, well, this is disgusting behavior by the government. Look, the government could expunge those student $1.6 trillion in student loans. It would have no effect whatsoever on the economy, except it would stimulate spending by those folks who are indentured with these damn student loans. They're indentured. This is a form of indentureship. They'll never get out of it. They'll never be able to buy a house. Many of them will never be able to really start a family and the costs associated with that. You know, they are indentured for life. And the state has done that. Yeah. Okay, and there has to be, finally, Section 10 of my initial Phase 1 proposal. We better make damn sure that there's food provisioning and delivery systems. You know, there's problems arising already in online ordering, right? And when you got shelter in place here, like in California, New York now, and places everywhere it's going to be, are we going to ensure that when we have millions of people infected and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands in California in hospitals, that we're going to have the delivery driver services here to deliver to the grocery stores? We're going to have to activate the National Guard to do all that delivery, for sure. We better prepare that. Yeah, and we better restore all the cuts in food stamps that Trump has instituted here. 700,000 people taken off food stamps in recent years. And why not mobilize the state-level Meals on Wheels, as they called it, for elderly residents, a great program, Meals on Wheels for the elderly, the very elderly, right? State programs in which actual little packaged meals, hot meals, are delivered to the very elderly on a daily basis. Well, we're going to have to expand that for those who are homeless and for those, you know, with children who are on the school meals program because their families can't afford it. You know, where there are a lot of children in urban areas and elsewhere who are on that program. Well, we got to expand the Meals for Wheels to cover them. Those the poverty level households and the homeless. Well, we better prepare for that because that's coming, right? We got to ensure physical delivery of food to local grocery outlets and somehow remove the bottlenecks to online ordering and delivery of food of necessary household items. Well, you know, Amazon, oh great Amazon, their whole system choked up, right? Well, that's a logistic thing. In World War II, we had that totally mobilized and organized, you see. We may have to start issuing credits or whatever they call them now today, script or credits, booklets for essential things that have to get ration books, they called them then, right? During World War II, you had everybody got a ration book, allowed them to purchase certain foodstuffs, you know, like butter or whatever, because most of it was going to the military. Yeah. Okay, so that was my phase one, by the way, proposal. Phase one. And you can read that on my blog, right? And the title of that once again is An Economic Recovery Program, Theirs Versus Mine. And following that, I talked about the war mobilization and how if we're going to really mobilize against this enemy, we have to mobilize the economy and mobilize government spending, which has to increase by $4 trillion. Okay, so what's phase two, which I'll be writing about? Well, in phase two, the first thing is this increase guaranteed for as long as necessary of 75% unemployment insurance, 75% of base pay, you know, at least for 6 months, probably through this entire year, renewable by the state legislatures. You know, the states distribute unemployment insurance anyway, and you can do it online, and disability. But we got to up the compensation for that. Second proposal, long-term, at least a 90-day moratorium on all mortgage loans, student loans, and small business loans. Moratorium. I mean, if you're going to give people $1,000 because they have no income, wage income coming in, well, you know, the bankers should do their bit. The credit card companies should do their bit, you know, and suspend for 90 days at least, renewable, payments on these big outgoes from your monthly budget. And we should institute no interest charges on credit cards for 90 days. No interest charges, you know, on credit cards that charges either that exist up to now or at least for any new charges. No interest charges, you know, basically. Small business, we should give them grants, and they're going to need at least $300 billion in grants, not loans. Suspend all stock buybacks and dividend payouts. Well, we talked about this at the beginning, you know, and that's what Trump has said. I don't like stock buybacks. Yeah, that's why he let him, you know, record level of $1.2 trillion every year. He didn't say anything about it then, did he? No. There should be a price freeze on all pharmaceutical and medicine products, a price freeze for the rest of the year. We need to set up under phase two what's called a Reconstruction Finance Corporation for the 21st century. We did this back in the 1980s when we had all these savings and loans collapse, and we really did it back in the 1930s. Government, if necessary, you know, should take a position, in other words, buy into these corporations that need a bailout and rescue, buy the preferred stock, right, in exchange for whatever the loan might be, and reorganize, restructure and reorganize. You know, you'll save a lot of money if you take the weakest companies and you merge them with the strongest, rather than throwing money at both the weakest and the strongest, and the weakest, even after this thing, will still be weak or may go under anyway, and you would have wasted all that money. Well, bite the bullet now and go ahead and restructure these companies. You know, because after 10 years of virtually free interest rates, we've allowed these weak companies that otherwise would not have survived to keep stumbling along, zombie companies, you know. Look, we got $2 trillion in junk bond debt out there, you know, in energy and retail and leisure and airlines and so forth. $2 trillion junk bond. Another $1 trillion in junk loans called leveraged loans. And a lot of the triple B corporate investment grade bonds are also junk. And there's about $5 trillion of junk loans given to companies, you know, that probably shouldn't have gotten a loan because they were run so poorly or for other reasons, you know, should have gone out of business. They've been keeping afloat. Well, you want to keep those companies afloat too and waste the money? No, the Reconstruction Finance Corp should go in and restructure them and merge them so that when it comes out of the crisis here, you know, you got healthy companies that don't need to be bailed out again. There should be a new homeowners loan corporation government body that we had during during the Great Depression. It was part of the New Deal. Homeowners Loan Corporation, what did it do? Well, those who were facing foreclosure, the government came in, bought the mortgage, lowered the interest rate on the mortgage, extended the mortgage to 30 years, you know, before the Depression. 10 years was the most you can get on a home loan. Well, they extended it to 30 years. They lowered the interest rate so people could afford to stay in and didn't have to foreclose. There shouldn't be any foreclosures going on during this crisis. A moratorium on that as well. But we should have a homeowners loan corporation to go in and refinance, help these people refinance, right? And the refinance rate should be no more than the 10-year treasury bond rate, which is about, you know, 1.5%, and extend if necessary to 40 years. In other words, lower the interest rates to 1.5% in the restructuring and extend it for 40 years, and you'll reduce the mortgage payments probably by half for most people. Well, that's a way of putting more income in their pocket to help them recover, not just during the depth of the crisis, but this long, hard comeback that's going to have to happen after it. It's not going to pop back. It's going to be a slow, difficult process, as it was after 2008. Now, what about the government bailing out the banks? Well, they're already bailing out the banks. And you don't need Congress to allocate funds to bail out the banks because the central bank, the Federal Reserve, bails out the banks. And it's already doing that even before the banks fail this time. You know, in 2008, they had to bail out after the fact. How much did the Federal Reserve spend to bail out the banks? Somewhere between $4 and $5 trillion. $4 and $5 trillion. How much are they now allocating to preemptively bail out the banks? $4.5 trillion. Yeah, don't worry about the banks. The Fed will take care of the banks, right? Worry about Main Street. Worry about all the working and middle class families who have no income, have to shelter in place, or their kids are home from school because the schools are shut down, or, you know, their company told them stay home. Now, what about those people? Those people are the heart of the economy, and we better take care of them this time, because we sure didn't do it in 2008 and 2009. No. Obama took care of the big corporations and the big banks, gave them trillions of dollars of tax cuts and $4.5 trillion bailout by the Fed. Spent, you know, $10 trillion in low interest rates and tax breaks for these people. And what did they do? Well, as I told you, you know, they gave themselves in the years that followed all this cash, all this money in stock buybacks and dividend payouts. Well, this time you better take care of Main Street, because if you don't, you know, people are already very upset, especially millennials and young folks, justifiably so, because they're the ones who have been getting crapped upon the most in the last 10 years. Okay, so that's the picture. Phase two. Phase three, you know, I'll talk about and write about even further. We need a public investment corp. We need to restructure the Fed as a public banking institute. We need Medicare for all. This is longer term reorganization of the economy. Phase two is what are we going to do after 60 days? Phase one is in my their recovery program and mine. So check out my blog, jackrasmus.com. And you can also go and listen to my various interviews, radio and public talks and interviews on my website. And you can get to my website from the roll bar on my blog, jackrasmus.com. Website is kyklosproductions.com, kyklosproductions.com. There you will be able to listen to radio and video interviews that I'm doing and have been doing. Okay, so that's it. I'm sure we're going to have a lot to speak about next week, but that's the show for today. And stay healthy, folks.